Next.
This is the Quality News Network. The Supreme Court is deciding whether or not to reverse a lower court decision, which basically ruled that 36 prisoners at Guantanamo Bay have no constitutional rights. Some have been held without charge for more than 6 years. Defense attorneys say they've been unconstitutionally denied access to the court system. Banks, mortgage companies, and federal regulators are set to freeze subprime mortgage rates for the next 5 years. The mortgage crisis has doubled the number of home foreclosures in the U.S. and negatively affected financial institutions worldwide. U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates left Afghanistan this morning for a surprise visit to Iraq. The defense chief is urging Iraqi politicians to take advantage of decreasing sectarian violence to work on calming Iraqi political factions. A car bomb exploded in central Baghdad, killing at least 14 people. Another 8 people died in other attacks throughout Iraq today. A top Iraqi commander and a human rights leader were among 11 wounded in a bombing in Kirkuk this morning. Another suicide bombing in Afghanistan. At least 16 police recruits were killed in Kabul. 26 Afghanis were killed in bombings yesterday. In southern Afghanistan, NATO announced it has killed a senior Taliban commander accused of being responsible for this year's kidnap of an Italian journalist. In Camp Pendleton, California, testimony began today in the court-martial of a Marine reservist accused of the stabbing death of an Iraqi soldier. The two troops were on guard duty in Fallujah on New Year's Eve 2006 when the American says he stabbed the Iraqi more than 40 times in self-defense. In Islamabad, thousands of Pakistani lawyers are demonstrating in the streets, protesting President Pervez Musharraf's purge of the judiciary. Attorneys throughout the country are boycotting courtrooms until Musharraf restores to power hundreds of disbarred judges. In Gaza this morning, 3 Hamas militants were killed in an Israeli airstrike. A devastating storm in the Pacific Northwest has moved north, now leaving a path of destruction in its wake. Residents of Oregon and Washington State are cleaning up. Officials are attempting to open highways and public buildings this afternoon. At least 5 people have died. You're listening to the Quality News Network. This message.
As the world moves to the internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
The price of crude oil jumped today after OPEC refused to raise production. The cartel meets again in February of next year. Government-subsidized mortgage lender Fannie Mae cut its stock price 30%, selling off $7 billion in preferred stock this month. The move is aimed at boosting capital. Freddie Mac says the quarterly sale price of American homes fell more steeply than it has in the past 25 years. The hardest-hit region, the Pacific Northwest. Home Depot is closing 3 customer call centers and laying off about 950 workers. Affected are centers in Chicago, Dallas, and Tampa, Florida. Drug maker Bristol Myers Squibb has already begun laying off 10% of its workforce. The move is part of a restructuring plan that will save $1.5 billion by 2010. The company is facing steeper competition as several of its top drug patents expire. Shares of auto parts retailer AutoZone jumped 14% after the chain store posted better-than-expected quarterly profit. The Chicago-based company credited a boost in sales of high-end products. Light sweet crude oil trading at $87.49 a barrel, gold at $803.70 an ounce, near today's close of Wall Street. The Dow up 192 points to end at 13,441, NASDAQ up 46 points. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. If you haven't heard the news, there's been another crazy man killing people with guns, this time in an Omaha, Nebraska shopping mall. We still don't know all the facts. It seems that it's just happening. There is a man apparently has been captured, or maybe even killed, with a camouflage uniform on. He had shot some five people, it seems we know of so far. Although there were some 50 shots fired, there was a grenade found at the mall, and as usual, people are very nervous and cowering and scared. I don't know why we thought that the massacre that occurred at Virginia Tech would only occur in universities. Heck, if you're going to kill people in schools, if you're going to shoot people at universities, why not go to other places where people congregate? How about our National Mall? For all the people that are concerned about terrorism, and we have a reason to be concerned about terrorism, sometimes the terrorism isn't from abroad, but at home. It's not just Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma City, but apparently now some guy in a camouflage uniform in Omaha, Nebraska. But maybe that's just the price we pay. Maybe that's just part of our Bill of Rights. The Second Amendment to the United States Constitution, it is said by some, protects an individual's rights to keep and bear arms. And, okay, you're always going to have a few crazy people, but heck, the NRA says if we all are armed, we can just shoot down those crazy people. We have to arm everyone, of course, including the 10-year-olds, so they can shoot back as well, and maybe the kindergartners as well. But what is the Second Amendment? What does it protect? What does it not protect? Many of you know that the Second Amendment, for the first time in American history, may allow individuals the right to bear arms. The first time in American history, because it is the first time in American history that the United States Supreme Court may rule that way. You see, the District of Columbia has some pretty strict gun control laws. They are among the strictest in the nation. They require gun permits, and they ban handguns in private homes. Now, whether or not you agree with that decision on gun control, and this was passed at a time when the Washington, D.C. was the murder capital of the United States, and there were severe crimes being committed with handguns, particularly in Washington, D.C. But whether or not you agree with the ban, it was decided on by a democratically elected government, by a democratically elected city. The people of Washington, D.C. wanted the ban. And the way democracy normally works in America is if people want something, they get it, unless it's a violation of the United States Constitution. So the D.C. ban was challenged on the ground that it is a violation of the Second Amendment to the Bill of Rights. The Second Amendment to the Bill of Rights, which some argue protect an individual's right to own guns. What is the Second Amendment to the Bill of Rights? Where did it come from? What is its history? What has been its ruling in the past? I want to discuss that today, and keep in mind not only the D.C. case, but the real-life practical implications of saying that individuals can have any weapons they want, whether in Omaha, Nebraska, whether in southwestern Virginia, whether in Columbine High School in Colorado. The Second Amendment says, and I quote, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, well, let me start over before I get all these marbles out of my mouth. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." It's kind of a strange amendment. Every other amendment in the Bill of Rights is pretty self-explanatory. It doesn't require a preamble. It says very clearly, Congress shall pass no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Whether it's free speech or the right to assemble or the right to an attorney if charged with a crime or even the right not to incriminate oneself, All these rights are simply stated. You have the right. You have the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment. The Second Amendment is different. The Second Amendment has a preamble. And it's interesting that the people in the National Rifle Association are always very quick to read the second part of the amendment, the part that says, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. They virtually never read the first part of the amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. But what is a well-regulated militia? What does it mean? What did it mean back in the 1790s when this thing was written? What does it mean today? And what does any of it have to do with the fact that the United States Supreme Court is considering whether to overturn the District of Columbia handgun ban among private citizens, non-police officers in their homes? What does any of it have to do with that? The first thing you should know is that there has never been, yes, never, in the 217 years since this amendment has been part of our Constitution, there's never been a single United States Supreme Court decision, and virtually not any lower court decision, excepting the one that just came up this year, that said that people have an individual right to own a gun. It just hasn't been in there. There has the most famous case to decide this was a 1939 case that is called United States v. Miller. And in that case, the court very clearly found that, yes, states have rights to militias. That's true. They have the right to well regulate a militia. But that doesn't mean that individuals have the rights to own guns. In that case, the National Firearms Act of 1934 banned possession of a sawed-off shotgun. And the trial court at that time, and that may be the last court to so rule, said that the statute violates the Second Amendment. The court had a unanimous opinion in 1939, 9-0, in which they said, quote, the Second Amendment's obvious purpose was, quote, to assure the continuation and render possible the effectiveness of the militia, and that its declaration and guarantee must be interpreted and applied with an end in view. The court said, the absence of any evidence tending to show that the possession or use of a sawed-off shotgun has any reasonable relationship to the preservation or efficiency of a well-regulated militia meant that that right wasn't protected. In other words, a sawed-off shotgun isn't ordinary military equipment. It's not found in a well-regulated militia. Sorry, folks, you lose. The state has the right to ban it. But in Omaha today, there was an unexploded grenade in a shopping mall. In Omaha, Nebraska, a grenade was found, and the authorities had to defuse it. Well, a grenade is part of ordinary military equipment today. Indeed, so is a tank, or an F-16, or for that matter, a cluster bomb, or I guess a nuclear warhead is part of the American military. Does that mean that everyone has a right to their own dirty bomb? I mean, if you have the right to form your own individual military, if that's what the Second Amendment means, where does it stop? Why would it stop at rifles? Why wouldn't it mean that, heck, let's just give everybody a right to a grenade? Is that what the Second Amendment means? When we explore any constitutional provision, it's important to look at the original understanding. I believe in that. And just because Justice Scalia says it doesn't mean it's untrue. It just means that he is a hypocrite and doesn't apply his own words. I've always been a bit of a textualist when it comes to law. I was always called that, in fact, in law school. I had professors refer to me and say, what does a textualist think? Textualist shouldn't be a bad word for a liberal to have. Words have meaning. I believe in the Bill of Rights. And one of the reasons why I've always been so clear to condemn George Bush and his warrantless wiretapping is because the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, another of our Bill of Rights, very clearly says the right of persons to be secure in their papers, persons, and effects shall not be violated unless you have probable cause to believe a crime has been committed. So we have no reason to run from the text of the Constitution. If it doesn't say what we think it should say, then heck, we should amend it. just as we got rid of the odious three-fifths clause or the provisions on slavery, just as we amended it to allow women the right to vote. When we come back, I want to talk about the Second Amendment, where it came from, what its history is, give you some insights into what the heck a militia is supposed to be, and talk about how we can use that amendment today, or should be used, in order to keep the guns off our streets. We'll be right back. If you want to call and ask me any questions on this, feel free to do so. 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about gun rights. There is a substantial minority in this country that just loves their guns, that are fervent about gun rights. I remember when I worked in Congress. And it's interesting, the majority of the American people favor gun control. But the 20% or so that favor gun, I don't know what you call it, rights, freedoms, they really love their guns. And the thing is, they love their guns more than those of us who favor gun control want gun control. They are louder, and even though those that favor gun control are more numerous, the National Rifle Association is one of the most powerful lobbies in the United States. And it appears that their lobbying efforts are working. It has now been 70 years since the United States Supreme Court last ruled on the Second Amendment, And as I said, in 217 years, they have never found an individual right to own a gun. But the D.C. Court of Appeals, in a 2-1 decision, of course, done by Lawrence Silberman, you may remember him. He shows up a lot of places. He shows up any place you see Karl Rove and Kenneth Starr and people appointing special prosecutors to look into Bill Clinton's sex life. You always seem to run into Lawrence Silberman. In any case, he authored a 2-1 opinion that said basically it's time for a change. It's time to reconsider the Second Amendment and to use it to advocate for individual rights. How far it would go, who knows? Maybe it would go further than a gun. Maybe it would go to the grenade that was found at the Omaha, Nebraska Mall. I should make a quick correction. I understand the grenade was found last Friday night. The shootings were today. The grenade was found last Friday night. It could be a mere coincidence that a live grenade was found 5 days prior to a live shooting. Somehow I think it's not, but the events will tell. Let's talk about the history of the Second Amendment. What the heck is a militia? I mean, do you know anyone that's serving in their state militia today? You may know someone in the National Guard, but that's a different thing. What is the militia? What was the founding father? What were the founding fathers trying to protect? Well, one way to look at an amendment is to look and see what it said prior to what it said today. You know, look at older drafts of the amendment, and this amendment was crafted by none other than James Madison, fourth president, often called the father of the Constitution. The original draft of the Second Amendment read this way, quote, "A well-regulated militia composed of the body of the people, being the best security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, but no person religiously scrupulous shall be compelled to bear arms." That's how the original amendment was written. You'll note that there's two main differences between the original amendment and the one that became part of our Constitution. One is this last part, that no one shall be compelled to bear arms. It's kind of interesting. I guess that would have protected the right of pacifists not to be drafted if that had been in our Constitution. The other part, though, that I think is more interesting for today's purposes is where Madison says a well-regulated militia composed of the body of the people. A militia was understood as your civic duty. It was something you had to do to protect your country. We didn't have a standing army then, and there were all kinds of things that were dangerous to white settlers, for example, Indians. The white settlers were encroaching on Native American territory. The Native Americans had been here for thousands of years. They didn't very much like the fact that the white settlers were taking over their lands and killing everyone in their path, and they would get angry, and they would fight back. And sometimes individuals on the frontier wanted guns to protect themselves, not just from Native Americans, however justified the Native Americans' attack would be, but from the English, perhaps from settling a dispute with their neighbor, not to mention the French and the Spanish at that time. A militia really was very much part of the protection. I lived in Switzerland for a year, and in Switzerland, every single citizen is required to own a rifle. My friends were very much progressive people in Switzerland, very much bordering on pacifism, but they followed the law, and they had a loaded rifle in their closet. And in fact, every year they had to go out for training. Switzerland, which dates back to the 11th or 12th century, was formed as this, you know, people living isolated in the mountains, trying to protect themselves from all kinds of roving powers, whether they be French or German or Italian or the various barbarian hordes, as they called them. And so people had to be called out to defend themselves. And Switzerland still has this tradition today of requiring every able-bodied male citizen, yes, it is male. In fact, Switzerland, as I recall, didn't give rights in one of its territories for women to vote until the 1980s. The argument was, in this very small town in the high mountains of Appenzeller, Innerrhoden, that in order to vote, all the citizens would come out in the main square, and if they wanted to vote on something, they would raise their swords. Well, women didn't have swords, so of course women couldn't vote. That was the logic to keep people voting until the 1980s in this particular canton in Switzerland. But I think the Swiss experience helps inform the American experience. It became because of a country that was relatively isolated. People were living in wilderness on the frontier. There were all kinds of dangers. And the United States national government couldn't always be there. In this case, the U.S. national government was just a few years old, and the Continental Army, if you've studied the Revolution, was was not exactly well kept. They often didn't have enough food, enough clothing, enough armaments. People were expected to defend themselves. In fact, if we look at the history of the Revolution, it was largely the militiamen of Lexington and Concord who came up and stopped the British, with Paul Revere shouting, "The British are coming, the British are coming." This is the context in which I think we need to understand the Second Amendment. This is the context in which a militia was there. Now, it wasn't just to protect against the British or the French or the Spanish or Native Americans. Let's be clear. At that point, we won revolution, and yeah, the British were still on the outskirts, and we certainly hadn't massacred all the Indians yet that had lived in the territories. But it was also a protection against the national government. And here I've got to give the right-wing wackos a little bit of credit when they say that the purpose of the Second Amendment was to keep citizens free of the national government to some extent. Elbridge Gerry, the governor of Massachusetts, the man, by the way, who later on would give his name to the term gerrymander when he designed district boundaries that looked like a salamander, Elbridge Gerry said of the Second Amendment, quote, "What, sir, is the use of a militia? It is to prevent the establishment of a standing army, the bane of liberty." And I think it's quite clear that when you look at the language of the Second Amendment, it doesn't say an individual's right to have arms. It says an individual's rights to keep and bear arms. Now, bearing arms is a very technical term. You might say bear might mean to carry, and I guess it does, but that's not how we usually think of it. If we want to say carry, we usually use the word carry. No, people bear arms when they fight in the military. I'll give you another quote. And by the way, I have to mention that a lot of what I'm talking about comes from a really terrific book review by Cass Sunstein, one of my favorite law professors, writing in the New Republic, and she's writing about the book Out of Range by Mark Tushnet. So I am indebted to her for bringing some of these examples in the article. But she points out a Tennessee Supreme Court opinion in 1840 saying the real object of the right to keep and bear arms is the defense of the public, and thus it refers to military use. It follows, the Tennessee Supreme Court said, that a hunter might carry his rifle every day for 40 years, and yet it would be never said of him that he had borne arms. Much less could it be said that a private citizen bears arms because he has a dirk or a pistol concealed under his clothes, or a spear in a cane. If you want a handgun for your own protection, that may be reasonable. Again, I'm not saying whether or not the D.C. gun ban was reasonable. That's an issue for another day. I've done many shows on gun control. The issue for today is the constitutional right. And what the courts were saying, as they construed the Second Amendment, is that you have the right to be in a well-regulated state militia. That is the right you have, and that's the right I think you still have today. But it doesn't give an individual such as whoever was in camouflage in Omaha, Nebraska, or Cho in Virginia, or the students in Columbine, it doesn't give them a right to own a gun. After all, what well-regulated militia are they serving in? If you have any questions about this topic, please feel free to call in. I know that constitutional law is not always very clear, but this one I think is pretty clear. At least in the way that it comes out. But if you have specifics on any of these questions, please give a call. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head-On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Hold on a second here. The risk of Bush attacking Iran isn't over yet. When the National Intelligence Estimate on Iran came out earlier this week, a lot of people jumped to the conclusion that Cheney and the hardliners have lost, and so we can all breathe a sigh of relief. I haven't exhaled yet. I still believe Bush and Cheney are going to do the deed. At his press conference on Tuesday, Bush remained belligerent. He said, Iran was and is and will continue to be dangerous if it has the knowledge to produce nuclear weapons. Note that he didn't say even that Iran had to have a nuke, just the knowledge to make one. That's a low threshold that they're close to now. But leaving the nuclear issue aside, it's already Bush's policy that there be regime change in Iran, and it's Congress's policy, thanks to that resolution Hillary Clinton signed on to, which said Iran is waging a proxy war against the United States in Iraq, that Iran is our enemy. If the propaganda peddlers in the White House don't think they can make the sale on the nuclear threat, they'll hype, in fact, they're already hyping, Iran's role in Iraq. Bush may send some troops or bombers even into Iranian territory to go after the alleged meddlers. Iran would then respond, and Bush and Cheney would skip off to another war. Don't rule it out. Such things have happened before. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Thursday on Fox Stop at midnight Eastern, where we'll take a look at Lenny Kravitz.
The spiritual, you know, it's very important to me. It should be important to all of us, you know. It's like, especially the situation that the world is in, you know. I think it's time for people to really start to think about this whole universe and where we come from and where we're going and get involved.
So be there Thursday midnight on Fox Stop, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
We want peace, we want it, yes, we want peace, we want it, yes, we want peace.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Constitutional law class today may sound dry, but it actually is extremely important because it deals with fundamental issues of life and death. As we've learned just today, when 1 hour ago, an Omaha, Nebraska shopping mall where people are trying to get their holiday shopping done was shot up by some, we'll just call him crazy man in camouflage. Gun control laws matter. And the District of Columbia residents decided that they didn't want people to have guns in their homes. There were huge gang wars, massive numbers of murders by guns, and they didn't want it. It's not often that you go hunting in the wilds of Washington, D.C. There are not too much game found in the district. It is, of course, a city state or a city district. It's not quite a state. And so the people voted on it. And they voted on some pretty simple things. They said that those that had guns prior to 1976 could keep them, but they'd have to register them. And you could have rifles, not easily concealable handguns, but you needed things like trigger locks or to disassemble them when you kept them in your home. That way, when you want to go out to Western Virginia to go hunting, you can still have a rifle, but you got to put the thing together outside your home on the hunting grounds in Virginia. Don't have these ready-made guns in your homes. And again, whether or not you think that's good policy or not, the question is it constitutional? For the first time, really, in American history, a court of appeals has held 2-1. District Judge Lawrence Silberman was the main bad guy in a 2-1 decision. He's a big conservative Bush fan. In fact, he was very much responsible for Ken Starr in the impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton. Silberman says it's time to review the Second Amendment, that the Second Amendment, which says that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, meant that D.C. couldn't require trigger locks on guns. Can't have trigger locks because a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state, and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, it's a pretty wild argument, actually. Even conservative Justice Warren Burger, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court under Richard Nixon and George Bush, has said that this idea that the Second Amendment protects an individual's rights is one of the greatest frauds on the American public by special interest groups that I've seen in my lifetime. Wow. Conservative Chief Justice said that about the Second Amendment as recently as 15 years ago. But the National Rifle Association has come a long way since then, and you will find many with the gun fetish insisting on their Second Amendment rights. Again, we have a clue, though, when we look at the amendment itself. We have Madison's version, which I talked about. I also want to read the Virginia Constitution, because many of our Bill of Rights came from Virginia. Many of the text of it, because Jefferson and Madison were Virginians, they were using Kentucky and Virginia amendments and proposing them to the United States. What does the Virginia ratifying convention say about a constitutional amendment? Quote, the people have the right to keep and bear arms, that a well-regulated militia composed of the body of the people trained to arms is the proper natural and safe defense of a free state. So in other words, if you've got all the people, the body of the people, all the people, and I understand it was just men in those days, but all right, the body of men, all in the citizen militia, all of them prepared to protect themselves, then they have to have the right to have those arms. And the main reason for that, of course, is to prevent any kind of atrocity by a standing army. And you could see how people would have that concern. James Madison argued, in fact, that the fear of a standing army was baseless. Why, he said, this is very interesting, this is in the Federalist Papers, he writes, quote, a militia amounting to near 500,000 of citizens with arms in their hands, officered by men chosen from among themselves, fighting for their common liberties, and united and conducted by governments possessing their affections and confidence, would be outnumbering a standing army. You got it? We have no fear from a standing army because we've got 500,000 of our citizens, and they're in militias, and they're officered by citizens among themselves, right? They democratically decide who runs the militias, and by doing so, they protect themselves against the national government. And frankly, this view largely held until the Civil War, when you had the southern states and their militias, which became the Confederate Army, defending themselves against a standing army. But ever since the Civil War, I think it's clear that a standing army is more powerful than the state militias. No more so than today, when a standing army doesn't have muskets, but has tanks and nuclear weapons. This idea in the Second Amendment, which I agree is there, that citizens can protect themselves against a runaway national government with their guns, it's going to be very hard for them against our tanks. It's just not correct anymore. The other thing to keep in mind is that the militia is well regulated. That's right there in the text of the Second Amendment. Well regulated. Does anyone think that the guy in camouflage in Omaha, Nebraska, is well-regulated? Or the person, and it may have been the same person, who left a grenade in the mall? How about a student with mental health problems like Cho? Is he well-regulated? Or the Columbine kids? Or Timothy McVeigh? Timothy McVeigh had been in militias. But were they well-regulated? Were they regulated by the state? Were they composed, as Madison talked about, by officers chosen by the people? And who has the right to regulate the militia anyway? Well, Congress certainly does. According to the Constitution, Congress has the power, quote, to provide for calling forth the militia, to execute the laws of the United States, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Congress can also organize, arm, and discipline the militia. States get the power of appointment over the officers of the militia and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. That's in our Constitution. So, all right, we can have these citizen militias. They can elect their own leaders, and the states can have their officers, and Congress can prescribe how and when they work. What the heck does that have to do with people wanting to own guns in the District of Columbia? Were any of those people in militias? Does the fact that somebody doesn't want to have a trigger lock, what does that have to do with a militia? When you look at the argument, and I'm not just looking at the text of the Second Amendment, but the Virginia Resolution, or the earlier text from Madison, or even the understanding of how our founders considered a militia, you can see how they might want a citizen militia to protect against the federal government, but it just doesn't work that way today. And if it's a well-regulated militia, what the heck are these laws all about? Why can't a state pass a law that says no one in our state may own a gun unless they join up with the state militia? They join up with the state militia, in which case we require that their guns be disassembled with trigger locks in their own homes and only put together when they come out and fight for the militia. Would that be constitutional under the Second Amendment? I think it would. And I think that that idea is stronger than anything the District of Columbia ever did. At the end of the day, a strict textualist like myself would have to agree that the Second Amendment does protect the state's rights to have their own militias. But it doesn't protect an individual's rights. It doesn't protect the right of a guy to go into a mall and start shooting people dead. For whatever the National Rifle Association's views are that, hey, you got to arm everybody, right? You got to arm everybody because that protects people from being killed by people with arms. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. You can still believe that argument if you want, and you can still try to pass laws such as those that exist in states like Virginia, or particularly like Montana, that says that everybody can have a gun, no restrictions. That's fine. That's democracy. I would never say that guns are banned unless the people vote to ban guns. But I think that Congress and the states do have that right. And it's a right very clear under the Second Amendment. They can't ban militias, but they can ban guns. So what does all this mean for the United States Supreme Court, for the National Rifle Association, for the D.C. gun ban, and for whatever the heck is going on in Omaha, Nebraska? I'll try to answer that after the break. But if you want to call in and ask me any questions about what I've said, challenge anything I've said, agree with me, disagree, I encourage you to do so. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
This is The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush Administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Somebody's trying.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important, since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about the nation's gun laws and the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. I have long thought that conservatives have wrongly claimed to be defenders of the Constitution. Prior to George W. Bush coming to office, it was a bit harder to make that argument, as I argued that, heck, it's we liberals that support the text of the Constitution. Antonin Scalia was going around saying, no, he's the pure textualist, and liberals wanted to read all these crazy rights into things. Usually this would come in the context of Roe v. Wade, when a particularly badly written decision, I'm not afraid to say, I don't think Roe v. Wade was the most carefully crafted decision of them all, talked about the penumbras from various amendments, and it wasn't dealing with the direct language of the amendment. And so we have, of course, conservatives saying, aha, we need to be a textualist, we need to override Roe v. Wade. For the record, I've always felt that the Roe v. Wade case was correctly decided, but should have been written better in a different opinion. The best, I think, excuse for Roe v. Wade, the best justification for it, comes from the direct language of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, which says, quote, the right of the people to be secure in their persons against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated but upon probable cause, and so forth. In other words, unless you've committed a crime, the state can't seize your person. And guess what? A pregnant woman is a person. And as much as the people want, you know, the pro-life folks want fetuses, people to think that fetuses are grown in vats, kind of like the Matrix, you know, it doesn't work that way. I've often said, by the way, that when fetuses can be grown in vats like the Matrix, when the test tube baby can be put in an artificial womb and the woman is superfluous, if at that time you want to ban abortions, I may just join with you. But that's not the case right now. Certainly not constitutionally the case. Right now, women who are persons have the right to be secure in their persons against an unreasonable search and seizure absent a crime they've committed or the authorities have probable cause to believe that they have a crime. So I just think that that Roe v. Wade's correct, but they should have cited the direct language of the Fourth Amendment. Similarly, I'm not afraid of the Second Amendment. I'm not afraid of quoting the direct language. And I think that far too many people listen to some of the conservatives and think, oh, well, you know, I don't like guns, but heck, you know, I guess there's this Second Amendment right and we have to amend the Constitution to stop things like happened today in the Omaha Mall, where it's now reported by Reuters that 9 are dead. Oh, well, I guess the 9 have to die. That's just part of what the Constitution protects. No, it's not. It's not. Unless you tell me that camouflage man was acting as part of the Nebraska militia and under his well-regulated order was ordered to shoot down the civilians, which I find highly unlikely. Unless you can show me that, sorry, he doesn't have the right to own his gun. He just doesn't. It's also, I think, important to point out that not all the provisions in the Bill of Rights are understood to be absolute. I mean, let's not take something that talks about a well-regulated militia. Let's just talk about free speech, right? The First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. That's it. I mean, it also goes into Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of the press and so forth. You have to wonder about some of those press shield law violations and so forth. But Congress shall, let's just look at free speech. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. We've got tons of laws that abridge free speech. Right? You can't have child pornography. You can't libel someone. We have obscenity laws. There are good laws that regulate free speech. Bribery, that could be argued to be free speech, or false advertising. No, we have laws against such a thing. It is understood those things are not included in free speech. It seems to me that the Second Amendment proponents that want to argue that it somehow protects an individual's right to own guns, they prove too much. Much like I think those that argue that a fetus is a human being prove too much. After all, if a fetus is a human being, when a woman commits an abortion, she's a murderer. And if you believe in the death penalty, you have to send her to the chair. That is the logical conclusion of saying a fetus is equivalent in human dignity to you or me. I don't think even the advocates of an extreme position, pro-life so-called position on abortion, really believe it because very few of them argue for the death penalty for women who have abortions. Similarly, if you really believe that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed for any individual in the United States, no matter how crazy, right? No matter if they're children, there's no restriction on children. No matter if they're illegal immigrants, there's no restriction on citizens. It just says the people. And no matter what the weapon. I remember when I was in law school and Justice Scalia came to speak with us and someone asked him about the Second Amendment and said, well, what about the right to have a nuclear weapon, a nuclear warhead? And he said, well, you have the right to bear arms. You can carry a rifle, a gun. You can't carry a nuclear weapon, next question. And everybody laughed at his textualism. But of course that's silly. There are chemical weapons, there are biological weapons that you can carry. Heck, today you can carry a dirty bomb in a suitcase. A radiological bomb in a suitcase. Surely the carry standard is not the appropriate standard. No, the only appropriate standard is to be a true textualist and to look back and say, what does it mean to keep and bear arms in the context of a well-regulated militia? and it means exactly what our founders said it meant. It means the right for individuals in their states to prevent a runaway federal government. It's a right that is archaic, that no longer exists. Heck, a state militia couldn't prevent the federal government if it tried, with maybe one exception. North Dakota has so many nuclear warheads that if it were to secede from the United States, it would be the third largest nuclear power on Earth. Presumably, we could never get North Dakota back. So maybe North Dakota can still use this provision. By the end of the day, it's no laughing matter. It should be taken seriously. I don't take the people who filed this lawsuit very seriously. But I do take the 9 dead in Omaha seriously. I do take the dozens dead at Virginia Tech very seriously. And what was the complaint? The D.C. residents said they didn't want to have trigger locks on their guns. They wanted to keep guns in their homes for self-defense. All right, well, that's a criticism they can bring to the political sphere. The case was the people were aided by the Cato Institute. This is what often happens, folks. You have these organizations that try to change the law, and, you know, hey, I can't really knock it because the NAACP does it on the good side. But the Cato Institute funded the lawsuit. The trial judge dismissed the lawsuit, saying it was only about militias. The NRA signed up, and here comes the opinion. The first, by the way, the only opinion at the appellate level in all of the United States to ever hold that individuals have a right to own guns. The ruling struck down the requirement that you have to have trigger locks on shotguns or to disassemble them. Trigger locks? Is that what the founders were fighting over? We don't want trigger locks? Thousands of children die each year from playing with guns. What well-regulated militia would have people shoot children? The argument is often made on gun control that, oh, well, in the District of Columbia, we still have huge amounts of gun crimes. And that's because poor D.C. is surrounded by Virginia and Maryland, where people can very easily have guns. In fact, in Virginia, you can actually conceal a gun and carry it wherever you want. Maybe the District of Columbia should put bridges on the Potomac River and insist that Virginians go through a metal detector before they enter the district. That may be the only fair way to do it. Look, these are decisions that I think show the power of the United States. We have many different states and many different ideas on states. I would never tell a person in Montana they can't hunt. I'm not a fan of hunting. I have never shot a gun. I can't imagine killing a deer. But if the people of Montana want to allow people to have hunters to have permits, that's fine. That's good. That's part of Montana tradition. There's wide open spaces. There are not a lot of areas where people live close together. I'm not aware of any big gang wars in Montana or of people shooting people down. If that's what the people of Montana want, that's their choice. Frankly, it's also the choice of the people of Nebraska. Omaha is a city of some size, but most of Nebraska is not. And that to me suggests that maybe Omaha could have limits on guns that the people of Nebraska don't have outside city limits. But that's what a majority of people are supposed to decide. The role of the Bill of Rights is to protect those rights that individuals should have even when the majority disagrees. It protects people's civil rights, for example. Even if the majority of Southerners don't want to let blacks vote, sorry, the 14th Amendment protects their right to vote. Even if the majority of people don't want to allow non-Christians to practice their religion in the public square, tough, the First Amendment protects minorities. But the idea that the Second Amendment somehow protects your right to own a gun outside of a well-regulated militia is archaic. It doesn't make any sense anymore. And with the small exception of the continued to exist state militias, I am hopeful the Supreme Court will follow the law, follow the text, and strike down this Court of Appeals decision that would end D.C. gun law. However, we all know the Supreme Court today is full of politics as much as it is law. and I fear the worst. And that reason why, more than any other, we need a Democratic president to get a new United States Supreme Court. I hope you enjoyed your constitutional lecture for today. Tomorrow, I've got a really powerful show ahead of you. We're going to talk about working conditions in the largest pork processing plant in the United States, Smithfield Foods in Tar Heel, North Carolina. You won't want to miss tomorrow's show. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off. Coming up, Bob Kincaid.